how can I utilize all these amazing things that are coming my way? How can I utilize this to not, like, I don't want to be alone at the top.
You know, how am I going to transfer my legacy from my generation to my children or my grandchildren?
What you're learning in the arena or out of the arena can be applied in your business.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wood.
And I'm Jennifer Connor.
From Equestrian Businesswomen. And you're listening to Equestrian B2B, the podcast that brings together industry leaders, entrepreneurs, and equestrians for conversations about how they build and sustain a successful business.
On today's show, we are talking about our favorite episodes from 2025.
Starting out with our first clip from 2025 is professional hunter rider Amanda Stege. And we talked to her about building her boutique business, how she just focused on amateur riders as a trainer, but then she also really made her program so that she still can accomplish her own riding goals.
My passion and motivation for doing this is riding, training, and showing hunters, is bringing horses along, and my own personal goals in the ring are still very important to me. So I want to keep my numbers small, and I want to have people that all get along and like to hang out with each other. And in order to do that, I feel like, yeah, most of them do know that that is a little bit part of being part of our program.
I loved talking to her about the personal goals. Like, I think a lot in her episode was focused on like goals. And I think that's so important for people to take it into account when they're trying to decide how to run their business, right? Because I think a lot of times people think more is better and bigger. And then you almost get consumed by that. And maybe you're not looking at like what you want in the long run. So I like how she runs her program. I like that it's so small, and I like that she really takes into account like her personal goals, and then her people take that into account as well.
Yeah. That direct communication before anyone even comes into her barn, she says, this is the way our program is set up. This is what the expectations are. I will have weeks where I won't be training you because I'm focusing on myself.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's really admirable, because I think a lot of people probably have those goals to ride, and they want their clients to buy them horses, and then, but they can't fully communicate that, and then probably get resentful because all their time is taken up with training and they don't get to ride themselves or compete themselves and have those goals. So I really love the way she runs her business and how she's able to explain it.
Yeah, I think it was amazing. It was a great episode.
Krista Kehoe was our guest in this episode, as she's a certified life coach. And one of the major things that we discussed was her four-step process for regret-free decision-making. And here's what she told us. Looking at our listeners as entrepreneurs, how do you apply some of these processes to their business and in a more business-oriented way?
So I think, you know, as we were saying before, because our brains like to work on autopilot and we like to find these habits of thought, what you're learning in the arena or out of the arena can be applied in your business. Because if you're finding things like trust to be an issue, we got to figure out like, okay, what's generating that pattern? Is it valid? And a question I like to ask a lot of the time is, okay, if I'm seeing this and it's stopping me from, say, making a decision in my business or moving forward to the business plan I said I was going to move forward to, right? Following through on my plan, let's just say, why? Like, what am I feeling that's stopping me in my business? And not everyone knows this, maybe you guys do, but your feelings come from what you're thinking, right? So if I'm repeatedly feeling this indecision or confusion or overwhelm or resistance, like, what am I believing about the situation that's causing that? Okay, so start there. And then, is that true? like factually, what are just the facts? Get to neutral. You know, sometimes we're like, well, they did this and that. Okay, well, what are the words that person said, right? Or what is the dollar amount in the account, right? Those are facts, right? And then we have a story about it that gives us the feeling that drives our actions. So I would say, you know, the biggest piece that people could take back to their business is working with the mindset model of, you know, figuring out what's stopping them or what their obstacle is, and then what's the thought in their brain that isn't letting them get there, and what's another option. And P.S., more than one thing can be true at the same time. I like to think of it like facets on a diamond, right? When you shine light through that diamond, you're going to have like light scattering all different ways. All those things are true, right? But which thing do you need to shine the light on, or which thought do you need to lean into to generate the results you want?
Really great advice. Really, almost like it's working it backwards, you know, the thought of, okay, the feelings are this, the facts are this, and then figuring out like what's stopping you. I like that. I like, it was very like tangible to understand it, right? Like it wasn't too woo woo.
Yeah.
It was like tangible way of thinking about it.
That's what I liked about talking with her, is she really explained things well. She made it sound attainable and logical. And I think she has a lot to say in order to help people, in especially in decision making, because I think so many people get caught up in so many different ways of thinking, and you know, trying to take in everything, and they get indecision paralysis.
Yeah.
Or is it decision paralysis?
I don't know. I'm not the word person here. We know this, right?
But I think it's decision paralysis that, you know, she can help get you through that, and her method can. And I think even just listening to this hour-long episode would help a lot of people, and give them some tools to move forward.
Yeah, I definitely had some great tools in it to be able to move forward. That's what I loved about it. It was actionable.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was good. So from episode 89, we had Andrea Sinner, who is an attorney. She specializes in estate planning. And this clip kind of brings out some thought on the difference between people who are managing for you and looking over your assets or your animals, and the people who are taking care of things day to day. It's something I wasn't even thinking about when I made my partnership agreement with a business that I own. And then when I went through all this estate planning, what we ended up doing is I had a living trust, and now I've kind of like have a document that says like that particular LLC will, my partnership's percentage will go to my living trust if something happens to me. Okay.
Yeah, and then it just, but then it matters like, so who is the trustee? Because the other thing is consider who you're putting in these roles. And this is why it gets really complicated. Like it seems like you could just ChatGPT it, or, you know, I love the LegalZoom and those guys, but you know, you want to sit down and think about what does that mean, and who then do I, is it the same person that I see in charge and the trustee of my revocable living trust in general? Does that match? Do I also want them to have any kind of management role in the LLC or the, in, you know, the business entity?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because there's a difference between the ownership and the management, and you want to
be
real clear on that and make sure you don't upset the people left behind.
Right.
Like, wait a minute, who's this person rocking up to tell me what to do?
Right.
Yeah.
There's a difference between somebody managing your assets and somebody managing your company who doesn't know anything about it.
Yeah. And say that you follow on from there, and the care roles for, you know, children, of course. And that's, you know, that's not going to get missed, but then also the horses.
Yeah.
There'll be people who are really good with the money, and then there's other people who are going to be your caretakers for the horses, and you want to make sure those, everyone's in the right.
Yeah. I really enjoyed speaking with Andrea because she really made us stop and think. And, you know, like she said, it's a topic that nobody really wants to talk about, but it's going to happen to all of us. And we should be prepared and know what's going to happen to our assets and, you know, everything that we have once we're gone. And I just really liked the way that she talked about it and was able to help us see the intricacies of what can happen to your business once you pass away.
Yeah, really thought-provoking on that difference between, okay, this person, yeah, I left whatever to whoever, but is that person also going to be responsible for the day-to-day parts of it? And are they the right person? And that is something like I didn't even think about when I was going through all the trust and all that. And so I think that got a lot of people thinking, not just about themselves and their children and their assets and their business, but also the part about doing it for your animals. Right. And, you know, I got a few phone calls after that saying, hey, like, that was a great episode. But like, how much did it cost you? Because everybody's like afraid that it's going to cost you so much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that you can get it done, not on LegalZoom, like she said, but right. I do think that you can get it done for a reasonable amount of money to make sure that things are taken care of. It's not, I'm not a trust fund baby, you know, but people think they say trust and that's what their first thought is, that it's like right. millions of dollars. And it's not even that. It's just having paperwork to make sure things are set for if something were to happen to me. So I liked that entire episode, had such good nuggets. But for me, like that clip was important because it was something I didn't think about. And I wish that I had heard and spoken to her before I went to get my paperwork yeah. done, because now I'm going to have to go back and redo some of the things to make sure that the right people are on the right seats in the bus.
Yeah.
If I'm not here.
Yeah. And I think the conversation around, you know, being responsible for horses and especially what happens to them after you have them, you know, like putting in first right of refusal for the next owner, that you'll retire them, you know, finding a good place for them. You need to also consider that if you're not there anymore. So what happens to your animals, the ones, you know, that you may have sold or the ones that you have now when you're not there anymore? And I think you have to be pretty crystal clear in legal documents, because if you care about your horses and what happens to them, you need to have that succession plan set and, you know, down on paper.
Yeah. And you remember, like, she told a story about how she was like incapacitated for a short period of time. Right. And so even if you're not thinking about like when you're not here, but like, what if something happens and you have a fall and you can't maybe for a couple of months make a decision, or even in a week, like we know horses like to unalive themselves or do it on a regular basis. So like, oh, I'm going in for knee surgery, but I'm going to have to be in there for 3 days. And I might not be able to get, you know, you might not be able to get a hold of me if my horse colics. Like, we need to have a plan even for that, you know, in the short term as well. So I like that, you know, she kind of talked about that as well. So it was good. I mean, I really enjoyed talking to her, and it made me really think about the broad picture in life.
Totally. We spoke with my longtime friend, Roseanne Nagel, about her change in career from being all in to the horses to having to leave them and starting a brand new career in something that she didn't know but caught on to extremely quickly. And, you know, talking about what she does now as a holistic financial strategist.
The transition from the barn into the financial world was definitely like the hardest part of my life personally, it was really an identity shift. My son was, I came home from doing a clinic and I gave him a hug and he was about two and he stopped breathing. So immediately I knew that I needed to pivot. It was very petrifying for me to kind of think like I've done this my whole life since I was 4 years old. You know, I've missed funerals and weddings and family events in order to go and be successful in that career. And then all of a sudden, I knew that I needed to make a complete shift. So I was really lucky enough to have a few of my very, very good clients that I had brought up their children since they were three, and then they were like going off to college, right? That they worked in the financial field and they just said, Roseanne, you know, you definitely have the right headspace for it. You've got the drive. You know, you can talk to people about these things. You've worked with me in my investments on my investment horses. I think that the financial world would be a good space for you to start. So I had some really good close friends and clients that were able to help me find a different space that I would be successful in.
I think it's great that she was able to pivot the way she did, and, you know, find a different avenue. I mean, so unfortunate that her son was allergic and how scary that was, but she was able to really take a lot of her skills and transition into a new career, which I think is amazing to be able to do.
Yeah, I really admire her for the way she handles adversity. She's been through a lot of it in her life. And, you know, she deals with it with everything really pragmatically. She faces what it is, she finds a solution, and then she works towards that solution. You know, I think a lot of people would be lost, and I think she felt that way, but her feelings and her actions aren't the same thing. You know, she talked about kind of losing her identity as an equestrian and a rider. But she is still able to channel her energy towards something else and make it a success, which is really admirable.
Yeah, I think that shows a lot of grit, right?
For sure.
And I think that's what a lot of us take away from being equestrians, is that sometimes you just got to dig down deep and get it done. And I see that in Roseanne a lot, is she is a dig down deep and let's just do it and go forward and, you know, make a decision and almost make it the right one. That's it.
Yep, exactly. So now that you're working in this new position as a financial services professional, what does your job look like and what kind of services do you provide?
So two separate questions, really, right? So like, I think that, you know, what is the job? Like somebody will ask me, like, what do you do? And I just tell them I'm a financial strategist because I do a little bit of everything. Really, it can be taking the overwhelm out. Like I was mentioning before, a lot of people seem overwhelmed. Just managing, whether it's managing significant wealth or it's just starting out, they don't know where they are. Like, you know, especially in the equestrian field, I know a lot of like grooms and riders and trainers who are business owners who are like, I don't have an IRA. I haven't even thought about that. My world is spinning so fast that I haven't really put the time into sitting down and doing something about it. I don't even know where to start. So a lot of people that I work with are starting from that space and just kind of saying like, okay, let's sit down, whether it's an hour a week or you're a person that wants to sit down for a full day together and we just hang out for the day and we get it all done at once, like whatever works, kind of that's one space. Or I'll talk to a lot of people on the other spectrum in the horse world, whether it's the horse world or outside of the horse world, whether it's business owners or people who are like, this is my hobby and I have a string of horses and their goals are very, very different. They're going to most likely have retirement plans and those things, but they're looking at wealth management. You know, how am I going to transfer my legacy from my generation to my children or my grandchildren? How do I avoid I'm not looking to break the law, but how do I avoid paying taxes that I don't have to pay? Right. So tax diversifying their estates. So it's very different types of people that I talk to in a day, which I love. And, you know, in terms of services, it's everything from like gathering a team of people, getting people connected to lawyers or CPAs if they don't have one, organizing what they're doing, to also on the other side of it, sitting with somebody's team, that if they already have their team, having a second set of eyes, be like, okay, are you really confident enough with your plan that you're okay having a second set of eyes come in to see if they see anything? Because sometimes that's really helpful.
Why did you choose that clip, Jen?
I liked how she highlighted how there's like so many different people that she talks to, that I wanted people to know that, like, even if you're starting out, even if you're a groom, there still could be a plan for you. And somebody like Roseanne sitting down and talking to you can help you figure that out. I think finances and it's something that's very close to me. Growing up, you know, in the horse industry and knowing it can be paycheck to paycheck and month to month, I am fascinated by it and making sure that I'm aligning myself. So like heading in a direction that I want to head in. And so I love when people can share that with other people. And I think that it's good to see that, yes, she can talk to a groom, but also like she's planning people, like she said, legacy, handing down legacy, mm-hmm. creating legacy. And then it kind of highlighted like the job, like it's different. And she networks and talks to like various people, and you know, you can have your own team and still talk to her.
Yep. I love that clip for the same reasons.
The next clips are going to come from episode 92 with Katie Van Slyke, who I am such a fangirl of because I'm a TikToker and love social media, and she's an influencer. And so these clips are kind of talking about her and her business as a social media influencer, as well as all the other things that she does.
You know, you said you didn't start out with a business plan, but since it's evolved and you are making a living from it now, did you develop one, and what does it look like now since you are much more structured?
Absolutely. So because of expanding platforms, there's all different facets, right? So there's, you know, back then it was just Instagram. So it was basically post a photo. Usually it had some sort of product in it. And then that company paid me. That was like the entire way that I could make an income. And so now it's very much more based upon revenue from ads that are within my videos. So like Facebook will put video ads into your videos. So will YouTube. So will TikTok. So it's like, that's probably the meat of it, is because of the volume of content that I'm able to put out, because there's just so much going on over here. Then a lot of ad revenue comes in through just views. And so that's how I'm able to put out so much content that is free for an audience, is because them just watching it is what's paying me. And then we've branched out. So I have a merch store. I just recently started doing Snapchat, which is completely different. It's very unedited, very off the cuff, but they also insert ads. I didn't even know about that. I'm just live under a rock. So I had just been like off Snapchat for years and didn't even realize. And so I started that earlier this year as well. And that's really took off. Then we've also incorporated some brand deals still. We have subscriptions set up so that people can actually pay monthly for extra content. Yeah. So there, and then there's just little affiliate links here and there. So there's probably like 7 or 8 different alleyways that lead into like the one pool.
Yeah. So it's really diversified now.
And that's the goal. I have too much anxiety to only have like one stream going.
Yeah.
I loved how Katie was able to easily explain how she makes a living from being an influencer. And you know, one thing that I don't think people take into consideration or don't appreciate from people like her is the sheer amount of time and work that it goes into actually doing this. You know, whether right. you know, whether it's like for makeup or food or whatever their interest is, you know, you can kind of dismiss what influencers do because they make it look so easy and it's just these clips or just these photos. But when we talked to Katie, it was a demanding job. And
yeah, like 12 hours a day or more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of video, like.
And, you know, we'll listen in the next clip to some of the other things that that she goes through. But that's on top of owning a farm.
Right.
And birthing goats and cows and horses
and breeding.
Competing and breeding and like all of this. It's unbelievable. So,
yeah,
it's really impressive. But she was impressive.
Yeah, very impressive. And that's what I loved about that clip is like breaking down social media, because I think that a lot of people have questions and they don't understand how, mm-hmm. you know, like all the different places that you can make revenue and how to. And, you know, I thought that that was pretty cool that she was so transparent about that.
Has your idea of success shifted since becoming a more successful influencer?
You know, I wouldn't say it's shifted totally, because I think this is something that I was just raised to believe as well. But it's definitely become more of the forefront of like, how can I utilize all these amazing things that are coming my way? How can I utilize this to not, like, I don't want to be alone at the top, right? Like, I don't want to get somewhere and be at like the peak of my success, but like, I only did it for myself. And so, like, I think I'm just absolutely blessed to be able to share that with people and like help others have full-time careers, like helping me along the way and opening up jobs that way, opening up opportunities for others that way. And again, not gatekeeping like how to get there or not gatekeeping all that goes into it, because I think it would be an absolutely boring world if like you're just doing something really cool and then you never share it with anybody. So mm-hmm. I think the success, like, yes, absolutely. Being able to pay for everything at the farm is amazing. Being able to expand my business is amazing. But I think the true success is being able to like help others along the way and be truly a difference within a community, an organization, and like bring goodness to the world in some way. And so like, it is a goal of mine in like, not just the AQHA community, but, you know, just like the equestrian community as a whole, to in the long run have a positive impact and to just be good. Right. And so I think that's really what success is.
Again, an inspiration on, you know, that she wants to share and not gatekeep. I love that. And I love that she is trying to make the community better by sharing, and kind of makes me think of that saying that, but all tides.
A rising tide lifts all boats.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what it makes me think of.
Yeah. And I especially like that clip because she's talking about what success means to her. And for a lot of people, just being able to make a living from that or being able to support a farm with all those animals and, you know, make that sort of money, frankly, would be success. And I think she's got the right mindset to where, yes, that's amazing and I'm thankful for it, but what else can I do? How else can I help? And she did in that episode talk more about, you know, being given this platform and what it means to her to be able to share information, you know, with the shrinking amount of land and people that have access to, you know, farms and horses, and just being able to show people what it's like and giving them that experience, even if it's just by screen. Maybe it'll get somebody to care about, you know, open land and animals. And so I really loved when she spoke about that and how important it is to her.
Yeah. And she's giving access to people who don't have access to animals. Mm-hmm. It's like she's giving them access to that information. And I mean, like I said in the episode, my hairdresser in New York City from Brooklyn, she loves Katie because she's like, that's a life I don't live. I've never lived. And I'm like living vicariously through her.
Yeah. So
it was, yeah, I think that people appreciate it. That's why they're so into it. She has like 10 million followers across all of her platforms because people do, they want to see it. And she is so authentic. And when she's doing it, when she's out there, like this is her real life and people are like fascinated by that.
Yeah. My, old college roommate, Renee from our school, she reached out to me and was like, I cannot believe you got to talk to Katie. And I was like, yeah, because going into it, I didn't follow her and I didn't know who she was. And I was like, okay, yeah, she's a big deal. If people who have no connection to horses are telling me how cool it is that I got to talk to her. So.
Yeah, I mean, actually more people who are non-horse people that I know were like excited than the horse people were like, wait, who is she? Like, and
well,
I'm like,
she's like more from the Western world than our English world.
Exactly, than our world. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, she bought, you know, VS Code Red. And they're like, oh, I think I might've heard about that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was really cool though. And honestly, this is one of those lessons where you just like ask, right? Yeah. I literally sent a message and was like, hey, any shot you want to be on our podcast, it's Equestrian Business Women. I follow you. Like, would love to hear about you and the business that you've created. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just ask sometimes and, you know, see, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt.
And it was cool for both of us because she'd never been on a podcast before.
Right.
I think we were her first podcast.
Yeah, I think she has her own podcast, but as far as being on other podcasts, I think we were her first. And then I think I helped her get on a couple more because they asked if there were other ones to be on. And I was like, here you go.
Yeah, that's so cool.
It was really fun. That was a great episode. So episode 93 was our very good friend, Piper Clem from the Plaid Horse. And we talked about building community and, some of this came from the fact that I've been to her podcast in person and I liked that she is trying to talk about bringing people together face to face again.
How do you think that hyper-local support in the area can lead to changes or can lead to more in the sport?
I think that you have conversations in person that you would never have anywhere else, not even on Zoom, not on podcasts, definitely not commenting on social media. And when I look at, you know, when I look critically back over, I think I've been doing this about 11 years with the Plaid Horse. And I, you know, I took some time, you know, with moving to like take stock in my life of like, where have I failed and where have I, you know, achieved things or wanted to do things that didn't quite get there? Where am I making progress? Where am I not? And I think that one of the things I evaluated in myself was that I want everyone to like me and I want everyone to agree with the things that, you know, not necessarily with me, but I want to come to a consensus where we all understand where we're going and we all want to do it. And that's so unrealistic. And then once you get social media on top of it, you have these like thousands of viewers, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands on some posts. And then all of a sudden, like you get 5,000 people having an opinion on something and like not all of them agree with you. And then you like doubt yourself. Is this a good idea? Should we move forward? And, you know, when I think about the structures that govern our sport, literally, I believe that USHJA was like formed by about 7 people sitting around a table. They didn't, in a good way, I'm not being negative, but they didn't care what everyone thought. They cared about what the people that they chose, whose opinions were educated, had different viewpoints than them. You know, you look at big programs like Derby Finals, like that was not a consensus of 5,000 people. That was a group, a small group pushing it forward. It's the old Margaret Mead quote of like never, what is it? Something about
never doubt that a small group of people can change the world. It's the only thing that ever has, or something like that, paraphrase. And I think that becoming hyper-local, like, and thinking about our communities is having people at the dinner table and letting conversation come up and letting people bring things up.
I think Piper had a lot of great ideas. That's what I like about her is I feel like her brain works differently than most people's, and she can see things that other people don't. But not only that, then she kind of looks for data, and then she offers a solution. And most people, if they see something wrong, they're just going to complain about it. Mm-hmm. Most people don't take the effort to really think it through and provide solutions. And I think she does that. Whether people agree with those solutions or not is besides the point.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, I think she cares very much about our equestrian community and how it can be improved and how it can serve everyone. Which I thought this clip and this episode really encapsulated.
Yeah. And one thing I love about Piper, she's very much for the horse, mm-hmm. you know, so, and keeps that in mind a lot. But going back to the clip, I just like that she's refocusing back to having those face-to-face conversations, because we've gotten to a point where so many people are these keyboard warriors and it's not really accomplishing a lot. And I loved her talking about how a small group of people can push things forward and make big changes in the world. And I think we need to keep that in mind in all aspects of our lives, businesses, whatever it may be, that, you know, find those solutions, go out there and find those solutions. But maybe it is sitting down at the dinner table and hashing some things out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think being in person when you can manage it always is a better experience. And you're going to come up with more in person than you do in other types of communication. And I think much less is lost in translation when you're talking to someone face to face than if you're typing. You know, those nuances don't come through, or you can't fully explain yourself like you can when you're seeing someone's face. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I like what she's trying to do with that.
Yeah, it's great. And if you haven't been to her in-person podcast, like, it's such a cool venue, the old Wadsworth Museum. It was super cool. Like, I've enjoyed going a couple of times and been able to, like, make some cool connections too while I was there. My good friend, Casey Coleman, was our episode 95. She comes from the standardbred industry, and she is retired at 45. And I thought it would be great to have a chat with her about how she got there, especially because her background, she really came from a standardbred, like I said, background where it's paycheck to paycheck. And to be able to retire by the time she was 45 is very inspiring to me. So I hope that people can take away a lot from these clips.
Yeah, so basically, one thing I'm blessed with is my memory is ridiculous. Like, I literally wasn't even a person that writes things down a lot. Like, I legit, my memory is stupidly good, thank God. Only with horses, nothing else. Only with horses. And Andrew and Anthony, like, I got them. Like, Anthony was one of my very first assistant trainers, and Andrew was very close to being one of the first ones also. They worked for me for, I don't even know, I'm going to say 10, 12 years at least they work for me. And if it wasn't for those two guys who are now on their own, I'm now an owner in their barn. They're on their own. They both have very big stables themselves. They're doing very well. Anything I'm sending to Canada goes to Anthony. Everything that's going to Jersey, the States, goes to Andrew. But those guys helped me a ton, being extremely good assistant trainers, and just the staff behind it. You just had to really trust your staff, make sure that they're working just as hard as you. And I treated them well, paid them well, make sure that you're keeping them happy. And yeah, if it wasn't for the unbelievable staff I had, I could have never managed what I managed, because it just, it was a lot. And my, like, I can remember a horse's equipment. Everybody's always like, I literally would be walking down the shed road, be like, that horse has the Murphy on the wrong side. That horse needs a head pull. That horse needs what? I don't know why or how, but I just remembered those things all the time on every horse. And I went through a lot, like a lot of my horses were claimers. When I started out, it was all claimers, no stakes horses. So the year I'd go to the track with five or six horses and come home with, lose all those in claimers and come back with five or six new ones. And that happened quite frequently. And somehow I just always could remember what their equipment was, thank God. That was just one of the things I was blessed with somehow, I guess, bred in me, I guess. But I don't know how to explain it, but I just could always remember each horse and what they need. And every horse is different too. Like some horses are tie-up horses, some horses are bleeders, some horses are lame. Some, like it's all, so they, and they all had a different protocol of what you needed to do with them to have them at their best performance. So yeah, just a lot of long hours. I literally went 24/7, like it was crazy. Like if you got a chance to sleep was win-win because I was nonstop 7 days a week for a long, long time. But yeah, just a lot of hard work, that's for sure.
What I love about that clip is that it's highlighting how much she appreciated her staff. Like she worked very hard and she put in a lot of time herself, but she also gives credit to her staff, which I think is important. And it's one of the things that I liked, and some of the questions we asked about in that episode was how she, these guys worked for her and now they are their own trainers and they left her and she was supportive of that, which does not happen very often in the equine industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved hearing that too. And obviously, you know, when she was at the height of her business, I think you said she had over 100 horses.
Yep.
Which is just mind-blowing to me. And really the only way you get that done is if you have good people.
Yeah.
You know, that you hire and you train and you set the example, like she said. And, you know, she went on to discuss how both of those assistant trainers went on their own. And like she said, she's an owner with them now. Like she's sending them horses, which is really cool. I really enjoyed hearing her story.
Yeah, she's fun.
And what I did at first, like no matter what you can invest, I don't care if it's $100 a month, like whatever it is. For me, what it ended up being once I was making more money, I was making pretty good money. It was $5,000 a month that I had go out automatically out of my account. Whatever you think you can afford that you won't notice, whether it be $100, $200, $1,000, automatically put that into an investment account that goes out monthly and you don't even notice it. And it just built up. And over the time, mine, like I said, mine ended up being $5,000 a month. And whenever I would have extra money, if I won a big race, whatever, something big happened, I'd take a chunk of that money. And I just kept, never see it again. Don't look at it. Don't touch it. Pretend it's not there. Let it work for you. And it just kept adding up and adding up. And then I would look at it a few years down the road. I'm like, holy smokes, like that's looking pretty good. And I got fortunate enough to have some stallions, which is what really changed my life, is when I got some horses that were good enough to go to stallion. And I would take that money and invest it. And like I said, some people think, oh, I don't make enough money, I can't invest. But I'm telling you, something as simple as $100 a month, it's stupid how quickly that really builds up for you and invest. And put it in something safe that's not risky and look at it down the years. And starting doing it as young as I started investing, I'm 45 now and I'm retired. So, and it can work for you and your money's basically working for you now. So.
Holy smokes. she had truly everybody, you know, you can say, you know, save your money or get an IRA or whatever. But when you hear stories like that, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously she was making very good money if she could sock away $5,000 a month. But like she said, she didn't start at that amount.
No.
She started when she had no money.
Yep.
And I think that's probably the way, you know, she said she grew up was, you know, they didn't have any money. They worked their butts off.
I'm pretty sure she might have said they were dirt poor.
Yeah. So, you know, to hear someone's experience of how they made their money work for them throughout their career and having it lead to being able to retire at the age of 45 is, it's really like you said, she's inspiring. And I think that's what's going to move people to take care of themselves and start thinking about what they want when they're done working or when they can't work anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I really wanted to bring her story to our listeners, because I think she's inspiring. She comes from a real place that a lot of people, I think, can relate to. Mm-hmm. And even though she's at a point where they're like, what do you mean 45 years old and she's retired? But like, literally, she started at a place where most of us start out at. And, you know, she has a lot of grit. She has a lot of talent, obviously, in training racehorses. But she worked very hard to get to where she's at. And having that eye-opening experience of seeing so many people that were Hall of Fame status people that were broke when she was young, that forced her to realize, okay, I don't want to be in that position. And I relate to that very much too, right? Like, I grew up seeing the same type of thing and being like, wow, you're supposed to have so much money and you're like 75 years old now living in a tack room, still mucking stalls. And I know when I was young, I looked at that and said, I don't want to be doing that when I'm 40,
right?
Let alone 75, 80 years old. So I just find her story inspiring. There's so many good qualities about her. Also, she got us a lot of international fame because she has a huge following internationally. So we had lots of downloads from that one. Like, in the first 24 hours, I was looking at the metrics like, holy smokes.
Holy smokes.
That was crazy. So anyway, that was a fun one for me, for sure.
Me too. And I think, you know, it's a good way to kind of close out 2025. You know, now we're into the beginning of 2026 and really looking for a new year and turning over that leaf.
Yeah. 2026, year of the horse, whether it's a chestnut mare or a bay gelding, still to be determined.
Indeed.
And now forward into 2026, find the links to all our show notes at www.eqbusinesswomen.com.
You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram and find Equestrian B2B wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave a review.